And your efforts, my friend, I appreciate what you're doing, your enthusiasm, your encouragement, and we want to join with you in that effort to bring faith back into our homes. Thank you, friend, for joining us. Tell your friends, Romans and countrymen, again about this program, www.saveus.org. God bless, be a blessing, and build that family in faith.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, this next hour they're going to be the views of Bob Chapman, who's our special guest from the International Forecaster. We're going to be talking about what's happening financially in our nation and throughout the world, and this is certainly one of the most exciting times I've seen in the last 45 years. I've been monitoring what's going on in the world, and certainly the whole world monetary system is really on the verge of a financial meltdown. Certainly, we have the collapse of the housing bubble, but that by itself probably could be rectified. But then we have the rising price of oil, which means that people are going to have less and less money to invest in other things, and we have the planned program to shift our jobs overseas and shift our manufacturing overseas and bring in low-cost labor to compete with American labor, whether it be illegal aliens or people being brought in under special visas to lower the living standards of the American people. We find massive federal debts. We have trade deficits. We have individual debts of just staggering proportions, with the credit card debt and the debt on the houses and the debt on the on cars, and everybody is in debt, and there's not enough money to pay off all the debts that are out there, and then we begin to find that many of our banks are just very, very reluctant to loan because they're really insolvent. It's not a matter of liquidity. The governments can create all the liquidity it wants to just by printing up new money and distributing it. It's a matter of solvency. And many of our major financial institutions and hedge funds and banks are insolvent, and that's why they're having to borrow massive amounts of money. Citicorp having to borrow $10 billion. UBS having to borrow $10 billion from Singapore. Merrill Lynch having to borrow from Singapore. From foreign countries, from China, from other countries, we've got to borrow to try to get our banks back into some sort of solvency. And nobody knows how many of their debt obligations are really valid. They really don't know how their debt stands. Well, Bob, why don't you bring us up to date with what's going on in the world?
Well, you seem to have covered quite a bit there. I was getting really interested in what you were talking about.
Well, you know everything that I'm saying here. They're one of the few people who really understands what's going on out there. But please, let's bring us up to date. Are the European nations, are the European banks involved in derivatives, or is it primarily the American banks that wrote the derivatives?
Well, the Europeans are as well. And the Europeans have gotten themselves fairly well enmeshed in this collateralized debt obligation problem, SIV of those initials, CDO and SIV, represent pawns that are packaged together, made up of mortgage loans, and an awful lot of them were sold in Europe. And some institutions, they had 60, 70, 80% of their investments in those vehicles, and they're stuck. And several of them have already gone under. And also they had the same problem with Northern Rock in England. And I think, you know, the thinking behind this by the Fed and by the U.S. investment banking as well as banking community was, look, you know, we've supplied the wherewithal to keep the economy going throughout the world since the Second World War.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead now, Bob.
And and so, you know, you owe us one. So what they did is they got ratings for the paper of AAA, which it wasn't, and they spread these CDOs, SIVs, mortgages all over Europe, and probably over $1 trillion worth. And so the European Central Bank has created over $1 trillion in liquidity for all of these institutions, and it's not only affected those who are involved in these mortgage securities. It's affected an awful lot of other banks because it's put pressure on them as well. And the reason why is that banks, both here and also in Europe, don't know what the other banks have off balance sheet, or for that matter, hidden in their balance sheet. So the banks and the interbank lender won't lend to each other because they don't have the confidence and trust they once had. And so the maneuver by the U.S. banks and investment banks at the behest of the Fed has not worked, in as much as everybody didn't keep their mouth shut and accept the losses. They made an issue out of it, and now it's become monstrous. And it's not solved. It's not going to be solved for a long time. In fact, it may never be solved. And we may start to have to, in the case of Northern Rock in England, they've essentially not nationalized the bank. And I think that unless large amounts of funds continue to be forthcoming from offshore, the sovereign funds that have been investing in Merrill Lynch and Citigroup, etc., unless they continue to come up with probably close to $100 billion, then the U.S. government will have to nationalize whomever can't attract the money to stay in business. Either that, or they'll have to merge a bank with another bank, whether it's Citigroup or somebody else, remains to be seen.
And of course, all this is highly inflationary, isn't it?
Oh, very much so.
Hold that thought there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is simply talking about the fact that the banks don't trust one another. They've been lied to repeatedly about being solvent, and then, you know, you lend people money, and then they'll go under. And so you really don't know who you can trust. So banks don't want to lend. Banks are reluctant to lend to other banks. Certainly that's why the Federal Reserve System and by the European Central Bank are pouring out literally well over $1.5 trillion. And of course, Bob thinks that they're going to start nationalizing the banks like Northern Rock and in Great Britain and elsewhere. And here in the United States, if they suddenly Citicorp and Merrill Lynch and Bank of America and Morgan Stanley and Chase Morgan can't, you know, get enough money from other countries, why, we'll have to nationalize the banks here to keep them from going down. So pick the story up there, Bob.
Well, I predicted something like this would happen before it happened. I saw that being a trend, and I believe that that the central banks really want that to happen. And the reason why is, you know, central government control, corporatist fascist government. This is really what it's all about, the merging of the corporate world with government, a method of operation that was pioneered by Benito Mussolini. And incidentally, before Mussolini was a fascist, he was a communist. And but they're very close to each other. They're both forms of socialism. But irrespective of the thought behind it, the point is this is where it's headed, and it could end up that way. And if you remember back in 1991 and 92, not an awful lot of people knew this, but Citibank at that time was taken over by the Federal Reserve, but they didn't tell many people or anybody. And the Federal Reserve ran the bank for a couple of years and put it up straight. And at that time, too, an Arab investor came in and bought stock and invested in Citibank a substantial amount of money. And eventually the stock went up to about $48, I think, and now it's back down at around $28. But that's how they solved the problem. That was 15 years ago. Citigroup, Citibank, has had a long string of problems, and those problems are caused because they've never been able to attract a permanent core cadre of banking people. It was a place where you went to and you did well and made money and you left. And that's been the history of management at that bank. So it's always the first one to get into trouble. Well, it did again. And so I don't know where it's going to all end up, but it's not good. And this infusion of capital could continue. What they're doing now with about a $1.5 trillion between the major central banks is they're rolling short-term paper. In other words, some of this paper is a week, some of it's a month. And so when it comes due, rather than demanding the money back, they're allowing the banks to keep it and just paying a very low interest rate on it. And that essentially is monetization of the loan itself, or loans themselves.
I think you have to, for our listeners, you have to understand that when you monetize, what you've done is you've just created money out of nothing and put it into circulation, which is highly inflationary. And $1.5 trillion in circulation is going to create a tremendous amount of inflation both in the United States and in Europe. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it certainly is, and it happens right away, too. You know, normal inflation, which can only be created by a central bank, takes anywhere between, I would say, 9 months and a year and a half. So let's say an average of about a year to get into the system and make it inflationary. That's why we know right now, if we just stop today at the beginning of the year, all of the injection of money and credit that happened during the last 6 months is going to show up sometime during this year, maybe at the end of the year, maybe a little sooner. And so the inflation that you see, which we graduated about 11.6%, and the government says it's 4.3%, that inflation, I believe, this year, based upon my figures, would be somewhere over 15%. And as long as you see the creation of money and credit continuing every month at a rate, say, of over 10%. In November, we thought it was, we estimated that it was 17.5%. Even if it stopped tomorrow, you're still going to have inflation flowing into the system for up to another year and a half. And in the meantime, the money that's going to the banks on a short-term basis gets monetized as a longer-term loan. That money immediately causes inflation in the system. And so we know that between now and the middle of 2009, that we're going to be seeing a high rate of inflation.
And I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that inflation is not rising prices. Inflation is increasing the money supply, and the rising prices are simply a result of that. And people don't really understand that. The more money you put out there, then the higher the prices go. But it reflects the increase in the money supply. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
Right. The inflation can only be caused by a central bank. In effect, what they're doing is printing more money and credit than they should. And a normal growth pattern of increases in money and credit varies depending upon the situation within any particular economy. A nominal rate would be 3 to 4.5%. An optimum, we'll say, would be 4.5%. The target for the European Central Bank and the Fed has been, over the last couple of years, 6.5%. Why it should be that high, I don't know, but that's what they said their targets were. And so when you see the European Central Bank at 12.3%, and when you see the Fed at 17.5%, you know that there's serious problems within the economy that can only be, or at least they think can only be treated by massive injections of money.
In other words, basically, well, what you're saying is that the 17% is the money and credit that they're putting out. And, of course, you don't solve the problem of putting out too much money by putting out more money and injecting more money. That's like fighting a fire with gasoline.
Well, you see, in their eyes, they know that. They know every bit as much, if not more, than I do about it. But you got to look at their alternative. The alternative is deflation. And once it begins, you can't stop it. And when you can't stop it, you have a depression. And when you have a depression, what happens is that not only do you have a terrible time within the U.S. and world economy, but you have people asking questions, well, how did this happen, and who did this, and why did they do it?
And you get people demonstrating out in the streets and marching on Washington, and that's the last thing they want. Because
they
don't have any money, because they're hungry. And this is what happened during the Great Depression. We had a veterans march, and veterans were marching on the White House, and they put the army out there, and they just shot them down dead.
Yeah, that's right. It was General MacArthur.
Right. Well, anyway,
that's the course of things that we're in, and it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Well, of course, now they point out the fact that the manufacturing is good, though, and the economy is good because we're producing, a fair amount of goods now, and there seem to be more orders for American goods. American goods are selling better because the dollar's down. So, what do you say to the people who say, "Well, gee, but the economy is really pretty good"?
You say to them that, yes, it's not too bad. It's starting to slow down. We are in a recession. We do have high inflation. But you have to look at the source of why the economy seems to be doing good. And those reasons that the economy look like they're doing good are specious ones. Inasmuch as someone's going to have to pay for this in the form of stealth theft. And that stealth theft is the sneaking, behind-the-scenes inflation that's stealing your buying power.
Right, and then, of course, the lowering the loss of value of the American dollar, which is aggressively falling, which makes, of course, our goods more competitive overseas, but costs the American consumer more for goods that are imported. So we're in real trouble financially. If you have any questions you'd like to ask Bob, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And I fear that we are really on the very edge of a financial meltdown. The baby boomers began to retire in January of this year. And we're going to see more and more people retiring, less and less people working. Where's the money coming from for Social Security and Medicare?
They're going to print it up.
Okay, go right ahead, Bob. They're going to print it up. I think that's a good answer. Go ahead.
It is, and they'll do that until the dollar, which currently is around 76 on the USDX, which is the U.S. dollar index, and they'll do that until it gets down to 40 or 50. And who knows, it might even go lower. The bankers and Wall Street and the Fed have simply abandoned the dollar. They have decided that it's far more important for them to keep the U.S. economy from going into deflation than it is to defend the dollar, which really they should be doing, because that would help them solve their problem. But they don't want to do that because that would cause Wall Street tremendous amounts of profit. And they're greedy, and they have seen things like this happen before. And each time they've always been able to bail out. I don't think they're going to be able to bail out this time.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Marty, who's calling us from Spokane, Washington. Hi, Marty. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I just had kind of a question for you guys. You know, we have Ron Paul running in the election, and he is an advocate of sound money and such, which is kind of a first-time sort of deal. Do you guys think it'd be possible for, if such a candidate was elected as president, do you think there could be a turnaround in this country?
All right.
All our elected officials,
all right.
Maybe, that could be a start.
What do you think, Bob, about the election of Congressman Ron Paul?
Well, first of all, I think it's very doable. Maybe people won't think so at this time, but as the campaign rolls on, he's going to continue to gain against the front runners. And so he is going to be a factor. And were he to be elected, it would be very, very important that the Congress would be changed dramatically. And how we do that is that we go into the primaries and defeat all the incumbents. And the reason for that is that none of them have done what they're supposed to do for their constituents. They just ignore them. And if they're not getting paid off by the powers behind the scenes, then they've been compromised. And so there's only a handful of people in Congress who have done what they're supposed to do for their constituents. So were we to have a dramatic change in the people who are in Congress, perhaps those things could be righted very quickly. If Mr. Paul had an antagonistic Congress, which was still controlled by the powers behind the scenes, his job would be very difficult. But not impossible, because the people are going to be clamoring for answers in the middle of a recession, and they're going to hear Ron Paul say, well, we should do away with the Federal Reserve, and we should phase out the income tax, and we should get our people back from these far-flung places throughout the world. Our era of imperialism should be over. And
hold that thought right there. We'll be back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We had Marty calling from Spokane, Washington, had asked about the candidacy of Ron Paul, if it would make a difference. Bob seemed to think it would, and said that certainly Mr. Paul would, if he were president, he would try to do away with the income tax, do away with the Federal Reserve System, get back to sound economy, and do away with imperialism and bring our troops home. And what? Anything else you want to say, Bob?
And I think those moves, first of all, would fiscally help the American people because they're so terribly in debt. I think also that there probably would be a move to implement tariffs again. And tariffs would protect the working men and women in the United States from free trade and globalization, the offshoring and outsourcing of jobs throughout the world. It's really, really hurting our country. And, you know, we tried free trade, or British mercantilism as it was known, between 1780 and 1800, and it almost wrecked the new America, the new United States. And they quickly reversed it and put tariffs on, and the country was successful more or less ever since. And so an integral part of making that work for the United States would be to introduce tariffs.
All right, fine. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Marty, before we let you go?
Well, just my thought would be is if a Ron Paul was elected or something, which I think would be a great thing, I was just wondering if you guys maybe thought it would be too much of his policies would be too bitter of a pill for the American people to swallow, or how do you think his policies would affect regular Mr. and Mrs. America as far as their living standard and stuff like that? Would we have to swallow some bitter pill and get it over with, or what would happen?
Well, I think there'd be tremendous recession in the United States. I think there'd be tremendous problems, but it'd be probably the only path to regaining our freedom. That would be my thought. Okay, anything else, Bob, you wanted to say before we let Marty go?
No, I think we've covered it. I do believe we can make it happen.
All right, Marty, and thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
All right, Ron Paul, await.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And because of the restrictions placed on this station I'm speaking on, it's a non-profit station, we cannot endorse a candidate one way or the other. Many of our stations out, our affiliates out there, are profit stations, but on this station we cannot tell you our preference at all one way or the other for the presidency. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is, 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Our guest is Bob Chapman. We're talking about what's happening financially, and it is my belief, and I think it's Bob's belief today, that we are on the edge of a financial meltdown, that the currency of our country is really in jeopardy. It's being abandoned by the Federal Reserve Board. Oh, which means, of course, the dollar is going to continue losing value, which is going to impact on the life savings of everybody out there in the listening audience. Would that be a fair appraisal, Bob?
Yes, it would. I think that were Ron Paul to be elected, that the people want change. And as we move deeper into recession, I don't think his job's would be difficult to be accepted by the American people. They don't know the details, but they know something is radically wrong and has been for an awful long time, and they'd like to see it straightened out. And so I think they would back him. I think before moves were made to solve that problem, terrible deep recession would have already occurred. It doesn't take long. As far as I'm concerned, we've been in recession for over a year, and we're just told that we're not in recession when in fact we are. And I think people would be very open to that change, even though it's painful.
Well, I think there's going to be, whatever happens, whoever is elected, I think there are going to be terrible economic consequences of the irresponsible policy of our Federal Reserve Bank over really almost 100 years. And, of course, they were given the job of maintaining the stability of our currency, of making it a solid currency, of making it stable, not going up, not going down. And they've destroyed about 96% of the value of the 1913 dollar. We've lost almost 35 to 40% over the last 3 years just to the value of the dollar alone. I mean, we're in real trouble, and most people have no idea what's going on. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we now have Dan calling from Los Angeles. Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing just fine. Have you called before?
I've called once or twice.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Okay, you know, now in the news, I'm seeing that the Japan economy is having some problems, and I didn't know that they were the number one buyer of the debt, more than China, but now China's overtaken that, and Saudi Arabia also. I was wondering if...
You're talking about purchasing American debt now.
Right. They're, like, actually competing to see who can purchase the most debt.
Right, of course. Well, I think they may be second or third. China has the most debt, and I think Japan has the second, and Germany's pretty close. But what was your point you wanted to make?
Well, with the if you look at Saudi Arabia, and actually, if you look at them, they are competing to be the top buyer of America, U.S. debt, Federal Reserve debt, but... if you look at the, you know, like the Saudis, for instance, or Dubai, or I'm under the impression from my research that they are kind of, it's really all under Saudi control, and that, you know, we're obliged to buy their oil, and so that becomes, my question is at some point when they're buying debt, buying pieces of financials like Citigroup and Citibank and News Corporation and the media, and then at some point, you know, if you look at the debt in 1963, it was less than $100 billion for the whole country, and now it's $9 trillion. At some point, does the Federal Reserve, it's a private company, does it become up for sale to the highest bidder? And, of course, the Saudis and Chinese would like to be the first in line for that.
All right, fine. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that the foreigners would like to buy our central bank there, Bob? Could you think that the Congress would let them?
I think with as much money as they have, of course, they might like to attempt that, but I don't think that they would, because there would be war, because the government doesn't run what happens in America. The people behind the scenes run it, and people at the Fed are part of that. And the Japanese haven't increased their debt in about a year, their debt purchases in about a year. And so they've been, we'll call it, sacrosanct. And the Chinese have slowed down over the last 6 months. They still have about the same position as they had previously, but they're not continuing to accumulate dollar debt the way they were previously. The Middle East has been. But I think that's born of an agreement that was made almost 100 years ago, and that was that Britain and the United States would buy oil.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we have Dan calling from Los Angeles. He was simply asking, you know, could it possibly be that as these foreign countries, Japan, China, Saudi Arabia, were actually, you know, doing everything, buying American debt, maybe they'd want to buy our central bank. And, of course, Bob said he didn't think that would be allowed. The central bank really runs our country far more than our country running the central bank, because it is a private institution. But, of course, certainly Bob was saying that the Saudis have been, or the Arabs, people from the Middle East, have been increasing their purchase of government bonds recently because of an agreement that was made almost 100 years ago, that they would They would invest in America, and, of course, we would keep them in power. Is that a fair estimate, Bob?
Exactly. And I think in the last, and particularly the last 10 years, that these dictatorships, which exist in the Gulf area, have been under some tremendous pressure from people within their kingdoms, as they're called, and especially among younger people, there's never been enough jobs, and they try to remedy that, but there's a lot of discontent in those countries. There are people who run things who are wealthy beyond anybody's fabulous dreams, and it's hard.
My final point would only be that it becomes a national security threat when, for instance, Dr. Stan had done the research on Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabis and the madrasas, that some numbers put it at 90% of that becoming, producing the radical form of Islamic terrorists. And so then we can increase our troop size, but then there's this funding going over there. I just wanted to say that if you listen to, for instance, the reasoning of Congressman Ron Paul when he talks about national defense, you start with cutting off the head of the snake, the funding, the source. You stop buying the oil. You can't do it overnight. You have to slowly de-escalate, stop buying the oil.
Okay, fine. Thank you
very much. That's all, but continue on, and thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Dan, and I think Dan's point is quite well taken, that actually it is Saudi Arabia that's funding most of the world terrorist movement, and we're funding and supporting Saudi Arabia, and that doesn't quite make sense. Why would we be supporting one of the major sources of funding of the world terrorist movement? But go right ahead, Bob.
Well, I think that is done so that they can keep the world in turmoil, advancing their New World Agenda, and also keeping people's attention on wars rather than internal problems. That has been going on for centuries with people who have been running governments. If you get into trouble, well, you declare war in the country next door. And you have a war, and everybody's watching the war over there, and then you blame the war on the economic situation. And people don't know anything about economics, so what happens is that they tend to go along with the program, and of course send their sons and daughters, in this case now, off to get killed.
In fact, I would suggest any of our listeners, if they have an internet, go to my website at radioliberty.com and scroll down to the letter we wrote, which was simply a speech that that Major General Smedley Butler, the most decorated Marine hero during the 1930s, wrote. And it's called War is a Racket, and it just talks about how war is a racket. Here was a major general, Marine major general, beloved by the people, who finally came forward and admitted what it was all about. That's at radioliberty.com, the newsletter, War is a Racket. Copy it and hand it out. I think it's a very important observation on the part of a major general who gave his life for his country. But of course, he realized his country had betrayed him. Go ahead.
Well, I think a lot of military people in history have come to the same conclusion. Some have talked and written about it, but very few. I think people get burned out is the reason they don't. The power structure wanted Smedley Butler to run for president. And that's when he really get into finding out what really went on behind the scenes. And that's why he wrote the piece that he did.
Right. It's a very important talk. War is a Racket. You'll find it at radioliberty.com under the letters. Well, Bob, before we go on, I want you to give out your address, how people can get in touch with you if they'd like to subscribe to the International Forecaster. And then we'll go to Tony from Idaho, and again, if you're out there and you have a question, our number is 888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Bob, let's get your the address where people can learn more about the International Forecaster.
Well, the forecast is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Usually runs around 30 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. And if you'd like to get a free introductory copy, you can go to our site, or we have a phone number, and the site address on the Internet is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, forecaster.com. If you'd like to call toll-free, that number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Also, if you'd like to email us, that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
All right, is there a telephone number?
And that number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got Tony calling from Idaho. Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I'm trying to get over a little nasal congestion, so I hope I don't sound too terrible.
No, you sound just fine.
In that the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman by
John Perkins, right.
He was talking about just what you were talking about the Saudis and the treasury bonds. And he said that, I don't remember what year it was, but we basically made a deal with them to use our military, we would militarily protect them as long as they would buy our treasury bonds. And that was a big thing that he was in on, that he kind of reported in his book. And
for instance, Mr. Perkins was really an insider. He was working for the NSA, except for their various front organizations, the National Security Administration, NSA, and of course no such agency as the other name it's known by. And we actually carry the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and a four-tape set of interviews with Mr. Perkins called Economic Hitman. And we actually have a second set on the secret history of the American Empire, and we carry Mr. Perkins' second book, The Secret History of the American Empire. And Perkins knows what he's talking about, because, of course, they've tried to kill him, they've tried to bribe him, they've tried to do everything they could to silence him. They even have a special segment on the State Department webpage under disinformation talking about how terrible this fellow Perkins is, because he claims he was working for a secret government agency, and I believe he was, and I believe he's telling the truth. I mean, would you rather believe the State Department, or would you rather believe John Perkins? Anyway, go ahead, Tony.
Well, I had a question for Mr. Chapman. I've listened to him quite a few times over the years. But I wanted to ask him how well he follows the Dow gold ratio. Because to me, it's probably one of the most important of all the charts and all the ratios. And I don't hear too many people talking about it right now. But I'm telling you right now, it's kind of, to me, it's pretty scary right now. And I was just wondering if you have a comment on that.
All right. What about the Dow gold ratio, Bob?
Well, I've really taken all the ratios and have at least temporarily stopped following them. And the reason that I did that is because the markets are being rigged. And when you have rigged markets, when they're being manipulated, you really can't use these ratios, because of the tremendous distortion that's being caused within the markets themselves. And it's the same thing is true of the charts. There are things happening in the trading of securities, which, you know, the Dow makes up part of that, small part, but an important part. And, you know, when you've got the United States government going in and deciding that General Electric is not going to go down today, it's going to go up, the whole thing is distorted. So under normal circumstances, there are many ratios and other things and charts that I would be very, very interested in. But we live in a time when there's heavy, heavy manipulation of markets. So unfortunately, from my point of view, you know, you can just throw them out the window because you can't use them because they're so distorted.
All right, Tony, does that answer your question?
I'm juried out on that one, but I've got another comment.
All right, fine, go ahead.
I watched a very good video. I think you probably mentioned it before. It's called The Money Masters.
Right, right.
And at the very end of it, there's a...
That was put up by William Still, my good friend. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great video. I mean, it takes like all of the best economic books I know of and puts them all together in chronological order and makes it very easy to understand.
Right.
But in the very end, there's this piece about how can we fix this, and you know, there's an idea put out by Milton Friedman, and I'm bringing this up because of the fellow who called about Ron Paul, if this is fixable or not. And Milton Friedman had this idea, or has an idea, that if you were to, I'm going to try and say this best as I can remember, but basically, you don't print any more debt money. You would print non-debt money. You would buy the bonds that have been used at interest, pay them off, but that would be hugely inflationary. So then, what you would do is that require the banks to have 100% reserves and do away with the fractional reserve system. Whereas they only have maybe 3-4% now, they'd be required to have 100%, and that.
Then the banks couldn't operate, Tony, because they have to have that margin to operate. So the banks would all close down. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but it wouldn't work.
Well, that was my question.
No, but what do you think, Bob?
Milton Friedman's a lot.
No, I agree, but you know, it's not difficult to change the ratio to 30%, 40%, or 50%.
That's where it should be, of course.
And you know, people who get mortgages would put 20% or 30% down, and they'd be fully qualified to purchase a house.
And that's the way it was when I was in South Africa. You know, you if you're going to buy a house, you had to have at least 20% down, and then you couldn't go in there and borrow money. And they made it very difficult for you.
It was the same here until 1988,
89. Right. Okay, does that answer your question, Tony?
Yeah, jury's out again.
All right, I would tell you one more thing, and that is the fact that Richard Russell has said that he's looking for the day when the Dow Jones crosses the price of gold. In other words...
That's exactly what I was getting to.
Okay, fine, and I think it's only a matter of time before the Dow falls and the price of gold goes up, and I think it's going to be an exciting time that lies ahead.
Last time that happened was 1981, I believe.
Right,
And if you look at the Dow gold chart, it peaked at about 42 5 years ago when gold was down to about 250
right
at its bottom, and from then it's just been going, went straight down, went sideways, and it's going straight down again. It's down to about 15, and I happen to think it's very important. Oh, by the way, Dr. Ron Paul got slighted, you know, by not being in the New Hampshire debates last night. There's been a huge backlash against Fox. And I guess Jay Leno has asked him to come on TV tonight
to
be his guest.
I'd heard that as well. Thanks so very much, Tony.
So, might be interesting.
Okay, God bless.
Go on, Paul.
Right. Okay, let's go to Bill from Cleveland. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Oh, very well. Thank you, Dr.
And you're listening there on the radio, in the station in Cleveland?
This is on the shortwave.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, Bob, thanks for all your hard work, especially today. You sound a little tired, but you've been doing a yeoman's job. What I wanted to ask is, I've been seeing hints that they want to float municipal bonds through the state to, of course, you know, the globalists shovel it off onto the backs of the taxpayers more directly. They've been hinting at it and hinting at it. He hasn't dropped it yet, but what do you think the viability of that is? And also, CDOs, there are what's called LCDOs. I believe there's about $50 billion in these leveraged collateral debt obligations, and I'll take it off the air. Thank you. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Thanks very much. Thanks for Bill. That's Bill calling from Cleveland. Did you get the questions, Bob?
Yes, and I think that it's a terrible idea because 85% of the loans that are subprime and ALTA loans, ALTA loans, which are FOIC ratings of 650 or lower, 850 being the top rating, most of them, 85% of them, were those mortgages were allotted under fraudulent conditions. And why should the American public from state to state have to go in and bail these people out who shouldn't be in homes in the first place?
Right. Now, what about
do they really think that if they keep the interest rates where they are, that these people are going to be able to make the payments, even at the low rate? And the answer is no.
Well, I think we're going to see more and more foreclosures. I think we're going to see more and more people losing their homes, but they were people who shouldn't have gotten into homes in the first place. They were gotten in, and many of them were enticed to go in, and many of them lied to get in. But, of course, they knew what was happening. And the amazing thing is that Alan Greenspan, knowing full well what he was doing, allowed this whole housing bubble to get larger and larger and larger. Why did he do it? Well, you need to read my November newsletter and you'll find out. We'll be back in just a moment. Go ahead, Bob. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think the ideas put forth in the meeting, which was held by the president for what is known as his working group in financial markets late last week, it's also known as the Plunge Protection Team, signaled that there were serious problems and something had to be done. Now, what that something is, we don't know, as you just said. There might be in the form of municipal bonds, which would be floated to bail these people out. But in fact, what you're doing is you're bailing out the institutions, because they're the ones who made the loans, and they knew darn right well that these people were totally unqualified for these loans. And, you know, you've got to put a stop to it somewhere. And this is the perfect time to do it. It's not the time to throw it on the backs of the public. I mean, if you're going to do that, why don't you just take the deeds for all the subprime homes and the Alta homes and just hand them to the people and give them the houses, because that's really essentially what you're doing. And that's not right. And it's not right to make the American public pay for that, particularly when there was fraud all the way up the line. And we'll start with the Federal Reserve, and then we'll go down to the lender, which is the banks, the investment banks, the mortgage originators, the appraisers, the real estate salesmen, and then the people who were involved in the fraud who became homeowners. And so you get fraud from one end to the other, and nobody talks about it. Yes, there were people in between who committed terrible frauds, and the FBI is chasing them down. But the real problem here is abject corruption, and corruption that's being sanctioned. I mean, these people who lied, who falsified, are going to be rewarded. What kind of a system is that?
Well, it's not a very good system, Bob, and we're in real trouble as a nation. We've lost our moral compass, and of course, any nation that's, you know, turned against God is eventually going to pay a terrible, terrible price. For I believe Thomas Jefferson was right when he said that God, who gave us liberty, gave us freedom, but can the liberty of a nation be maintained when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. Thank you so very much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you again next Monday afternoon. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Bob Chapman. Hope you enjoyed the program there. I always do. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our program with Bob Chapman. And if you haven't yet read my little pamphlet called The History of Money, it's available. And then, of course, my talk on the financial tsunami, why all of the various factors are coming together at this time and what they are. And, of course, there's a syllabus that goes with that. We recommend at a special reduced price if you get the DVD and or video and the syllabus together. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin. The book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, Fiat Money Inflation in France, will give you an understanding of what's happening financially and what you're going to have to do to protect yourself and your family. And, of course, I'll give you a hint, and that's diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't put your eggs in one basket, because if you do, somebody's going to step on that basket. So if you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Now, to put things into their spiritual perspective, let me suggest my series of pamphlets, there are three of them, called The Occult Hierarchy. Because you can't understand anything that's going on today unless you understand that there truly are occult forces at work in the world. That there is another dimension. That there really are people who've given themselves to that other dimension. And so let me suggest you think about that three pamphlet set, The Occult Hierarchy. It's my writings, the writings of Dr. Dennis Cuddy. I think you'll be fascinated by it. It's an excellent introduction to the forces behind the forces behind the forces. And then, of course, we have the four-tape set on the supernatural, four-tape or four-CD set. The four-tape set on Satanism and deliverance. And, of course, you're going to hear a woman who was a victim of satanic ritual abuse, who was able to overcome that with the help of Marion Knott, who's a grass farmer, and his discussion of having taken care of many people who have been demonically possessed. We have the four-tape set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and the book that goes with that, The Hostage to the Devil. That's Malachi Martin's excellent book. And then the four-tape set. We want you to understand that this is not imaginary. There is another dimension. And until you recognize that, it's very difficult to understand what's going on. And so that's what my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the CD, Brotherhood of Darkness, are about. And that is what the talk, it's on DVD, The Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret. And let me recommend that to you. Of course, you can see some of these up on our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. And you can watch them there for nothing. But, of course, we hope you want to get the DVDs. And, of course, the Forbidden Secret does come with a syllabus. And then, of course, we do hope that you'll want to get the four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. The Secret Behind the Secret. And then, of course, to put this into its clear perspective, there are two professionally done DVDs by our good friend Chris Pinto entitled The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone. And Riddles in Stone is certainly one of my favorite. You'll actually see the Philosophical Research Society in Southern California, where Manly P. Hall worked for many years, and where, of course, he was given a fabulous amount of money to go and travel throughout the world to bring together all of the mysterious secrets of the secret societies that have been around since the days of ancient Babylon and before. And, of course, Riddles in Stone, a very important production. The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and there really is a secret out there, and you need to understand what it is for times like this. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king, but the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, right now they're going to be those of Arthur Burnclow, who's with the Veterans for Constitutional Law, and he represents veterans who are already being misused and taken advantage of by the Veterans Administration. He works without pay, as do all the people in his organization. He does a great job, and he keeps us abreast of what's happening with Veterans Affairs. Arthur, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Good evening, Dr. Stan. It's so good to work with you again.
All right, fine. Will you pick the story up? And what's happening? Of course, we've heard that, you know, many of our veterans, when they come home, are certainly within about 3 months, have come down with some sort of a mysterious illness. It's just about 30% of them, and then there, of course, there are others who are going to the Veterans Administration for service-connected disabilities, and they sort of getting the runaround in most instances. Tell us what's going on.
Well, the entire system is an abomination, and we're not getting any help at all from Congress, not a bit. Congress or the Senate. In fact, there are several bills relating to these problems that are up here now. And I'm not sure if you've heard about the Senate Bill number 1959 yet.
I haven't. So tell us about it.
Okay. It's Senate Bill 1959, S-1959, to criminalize thoughts, blogs, books, and free speech across America. And it's unbelievable here. It's the end of free speech in America. And I do believe it's finally arrived at our doorstep, and it's a new law called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act.
Oh, is this the one where they're going to set up the commission to study terrorism in America?
Yes, it is. It's an awful thing, and I'm reading through this, and I've talked to several congressmen and several senators, and they are. If you've ever spoken to people who are evasive, these are the most evasive people in the world. They won't give you a straight answer for anything. And it's worded in such a clever way that it could allow the United States government to arrest and incarcerate any individual who speaks out against the Bush administration, the war in Iraq, the Department of Homeland Security, or any government agency, including the FDA. The law has already passed the House on a traitorous government agency. It's already passed the House with a vote of 405-6, which leads me to believe people are not reading the bills that are in front of him. They're not even reading the bills that are sitting in front of him, and it's now being considered in the Senate, where a vote on this is imminent, and all over the Internet, intelligent people who care about freedom, they're speaking out against this extremely dangerous law. We've got Philip Giraldi at the Huffington Post, Declan McCullough at CNETsNews.com, Catherine Smith at OpEdNews.com, and, of course, our old friend Alex Jones at PrisonPlanet.com.
Well, I think that I had a friend of mine, Senator Bill Richardson,
yes,
who had been in Congress. He was a state senator for many years. He wrote a book called You Really Don't Think That We Read the Bills, Do You? And I think that that was really a very good commentary. And
my God,
most of the congressmen don't read the bills, don't understand the implications, and that's why we should have far fewer bills passed. We ought to have Congress in session maybe about 2 weeks a year.
Ah. Well,
go right ahead, Arthur.
This bill, I believe it's the beginning of the end of free speech in America, and if it passes, all the information sources you know and trust could very well be shut down and their authors possibly even imprisoned. The News Target could be taken offline and anyone could be arrested as a terrorist. Jeff Rentz, I don't know if you know these people, at www.rentz.com.
Oh, I know Jeff quite well, and you're right, go ahead. He does a good job, a lot of good information going out.
I know, he's really good, and he could be labeled as a terrorist and arrested. Byron Richards, Len Horowitz, Paul Craig Roberts, these are all the people we listen to and follow. Greg Palast, Ron Paul, and even Al Gore. They could all be arrested, silenced, and incarcerated. And this is not an exaggeration. It's a literal reading of the law, which you can check for yourself here. If you don't mind, I'm going to give you a very, very long thing to look up here. Anyone who's got a computer, look this up. http://Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, .loc.gov, /home/, G-P-O-X-M-I-C, 110/, H-1955, RFS.XML. You're going to be stunned when you read this.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, do you have that posted on your website? Because most people aren't going to be able to write that down. Do you have it posted on your website someplace?
It should be on my website. They were supposed to add it to it yesterday.
So certainly go to Veterans for Constitutional Law website. Is that the correct website to go to?
Yeah, Veterans for Constitutional Law. VFCLL.com.
VFCLL.com.
Yeah.
Okay, you can get it there.
Yeah, I think it was posted there 2 days ago. I believe it was.
Because people are never going
to
write.
If they call me, I'll be glad to give them this. If they call my number, I'll be glad to give them this over the phone.
All right, fine. Well, I'm very concerned that they want to get this through. You have to understand there really are people out there who want a dictatorship in America. They've always been there from the very inception of our country. And our founding fathers were concerned about this tendency. They did not trust people with power, and that is why they limited the power of the central authority. And well, as long as it was limited, we were free, but the limits are gone. Be back. Well, go ahead, Arthur.
Well, it's frightening when I look at the Adolf Hitler regime in the 1930s and what we have today with Mr. Bush and his group. It's frightening the similarities between the two, and this bill states, ideologically based violence means the use, planned use, or threatened use of force or violence by a group or individual to promote the group or individual's political, religious, or social beliefs. Now note, this means the planned use of force to promote a political or social belief would be considered as an act of terrorism. This all hinges on the definition of force, of course, based on the loose use of logic in Washington these days, and the slippery interpretation of the meaning of the words force could mean a grassroots campaign to barrage Congress with faxes. It could mean a nonviolent street protest. It could mean a letter-writing campaign that deluges the Senate with too much mail. It could be a sit-in protest that blocks access to a business or organization. Or it could be a grassroots email campaign that overloads the email servers of any government department or agency. Now, you get the idea. Force could be defined as practically anything, and since the planned use of force would be considered a criminal act of terrorism, anyone who simply thinks about a grassroots action campaign would be engaged in terrorist acts, according to this Senate Bill 1959. And if you stop somebody on the street and handed them a Bible, for example, this could be considered an act of terrorism, the use of force to promote the individual's religious beliefs. And if you sent a barrage of angry letters to Washington about global warming and the destruction of the environment by the U.S. military, this could also be considered as an act of terrorism to promote the individual's political beliefs. And if you believe in same-sex marriage and you wrote a letter threatening to sit in a protest in front of the state's Capitol building, this could be considered as an act of terrorism, even if you never carried it out. Planned use of force to promote a social belief. Now, the United States is on the fast track to fascism.
Now, of course, the First Amendment limits, the Congress as far as their ability to limit the right of the people to redress Congress.
Yes.
For redress of their grievances, to address Congress for redress of their grievances. There are people who do not want any sort of organized opposition or demonstrations.
That's right.
They want simply to be in total control over our lives. So I share your concern, Arthur, and I think that legislation is an abomination, and I think that everybody should be aware of it and should understand that, although they may tell you that it's just for very benign purposes, every time you pass a law, it takes away a certain amount of freedom.
Oh.
And certainly when the people passed the civil rights law, they never realized it was going to protect fat people. It was going to give them special rights or give the elderly special rights or do away with sex discrimination. Whenever you pass a law, you never know what is going to come out of it. And certainly I share your concern. Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted
to talk about on this legislation?
Yeah, this is really frightening, and I would say the United States is on a fast track to fascism at this point, and the Congress is working right alongside this nation's traitorous leaders to criminalize any thoughts, words, or speeches that disagree with current government policies regarding war, terrorism, domestic surveillance, and civil liberties. And simply speaking out against the war in Iraq could soon be labeled a crime.
We'll have to wait. We can't say that, but it certainly they could always misinterpret that. And that's the problem with the Military Commission Act. Anybody who's accused of being a terrorist, they can simply arrest and put in prison and take away the right of habeas corpus. Of course, it's not for citizens, but then how would you prove you were a citizen if you were in prison? And the Military Commission Act specifically stipulates that the courts can't intervene to give you a hearing because, of course, that would be a violation of the law. So why would anybody want to do away with the right of habeas corpus unless they were considering a dictatorship? That is, habeas corpus is as old as the Magna Carta. And yet, of course, the Bush administration pushed through the Military Commission Act that does away with the right of habeas corpus, but we're told only for non-citizens. But then how do you prove you're a citizen if you can't get into a court? So go right ahead.
Well, this didn't just happen. This has been planned for years and years, and it's now taken effect. Now, there's a must-see video. I don't know if you've seen this, Dr. Stan. Naomi Wolf's lecture on 10 Steps to Fascism.
No, I haven't.
You haven't? Okay, it's a video lecture. If you get a chance to watch it, it's by Naomi Wolf. She's the author of The End of America. And she covers this topic with with great elegance and a deep understanding of history. And you can see her video on YouTube. YouTube, and that's http://www.youtube.com/ watch =V=RJALF12PAWC. This is about the best thing that'll describe this. If you want, I'll repeat this right
now.
No,
I don't think so. Let's not, because people aren't going to get it. They can go up and Google it in on YouTube. Google.
YouTube, Naomi Wolf.
And that would be the way to get it. You Google Naomi Wolf and YouTube, and you'll be able to find that. So, you know, because the average individual, Arthur, is not going to be able to write that down.
Probably not, no.
All right, so basically, Naomi Wolf has written a book called The End of America, and I think that we have to understand that we are at the end of this country unless the American people really care about freedom. Most people do not understand the Constitution. Most people do not understand that the current war is unconstitutional. Most people do not understand that our financial system is unconstitutional, and most of the bills that are passed by Congress are unconstitutional, and they're being enacted by legislators who have sworn to uphold our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and yet it is our very legislators who are enemies of freedom because they are enacting legislation that is frankly unconstitutional. So go right ahead.
Well, you know, it's designed, this thing is designed, this S-1959, it's designed to squash all opposition to the state's ongoing march toward blatant fascism, where secret police and secret prisons dominate the law enforcement landscape, stripping U.S. citizens of civil rights and constitutional protection, and thought crimes are about to become a reality in the United States of America, and Congress is pushing this through as quickly as possible so that each individual member of Congress can claim that he or she is against terrorism. But the bill doesn't merely target terrorism. It targets everyone who speaks or even thinks thoughts against the U.S. federal government. And with this bill, the U.S. government is officially labeling the people of the United States, not just veterans, but the people of the United States as criminals, and it's drawing a line in the sand and stating that from now on, it's the government versus the people. And if we don't stop this bill from becoming law, Dr. Stan, we are lost as a nation.
Well, I think that people have to understand that the founding fathers of this country did not trust government, and that is why they put in the 9th and 10th Amendments. That is why they limited the power of the central authority over the lives of the people. And if the founding fathers didn't trust government, why should we trust government today?
Exactly.
Go right ahead.
Well, if you live in the United States, it's urgent that you call your senators right now and voice your strong opposition against this extremely dangerous law. I've got some Senate numbers. They're 800 numbers. If anyone wants to take these down, I've got them here.
All right, go ahead. Get those out.
1-877-851-6437. 1-800-833-6354. 1-888-355-3588. 1-866-220-0044. 1-866-808-0065. 1-877-762-8762. 1-866-340-9281. And finally, 1-800-862-5530.
And we just simply ask for your state senator, is that right?
Yes.
Your United States senator. Okay, fine. So, and what is the number of the bill one more time?
S-1959.
S-1959. Okay,
and
fine.
Make sure you know the names of your senators. Call the U.S. Senate switchboard using one of the numbers above. Ask to speak to the offices of your senators. Tell them you're strongly opposed to S-1959, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. and ask for their fax number and follow up with a written signed letter that you fax to your senators. And it's so important for every American to work together and stop this bill from becoming a law.
Okay, fine, Arthur. I certainly agree with you, and I hope that people will be concerned about it, because, of course, there really is a tendency out there. There really are people within the establishment, within the people who are working behind the scenes, who would take away our freedom, who would, of course, gut the very heart of our Constitution. And, of course, you could say, well, the bill is unconstitutional, but how are you going to get it before the Supreme Court? And how long would it take? And how much damage could it do in the meantime? And of course, you might say, well, that's not going to affect me. But how do you know? And, of course, once, of course, you've got into the system, it's very, very difficult to get out. So,
it's absolutely frightening, Dr. Stan. Right.
We'll be back in just a moment here with Arthur Bernclau as we begin talking about some of the problems in reference to the veterans here in our country and their mistreatment by the Veterans Administration. I hope that's not going to be terrorist talk, too.
I don't know, Dr. Stan. You got to look over your shoulder.
All right, fine. You go right ahead. Do you want to get into the veterans' problems?
Yes, we're getting right into it now. We have something now called the Veterans Disarmament Act. It has been passed by Congress, and it's on the way to the president for his signature. The Veterans Disarmament Act, Veterans Firearms Disarmament Act, and I can give you the two numbers. The House bill is H.R. 2640, and the Senate bill is S-2084. And we've been looking for the National Rifle Association to back us up in this, but they ran the other way. It seems like only one outfit here in America, the Gun Owners of America, the GOA, in Springfield, Virginia, seems to be the only one that is really fighting this. And here is a quote from...
Why don't you tell our listeners what the legislation is about, Arthur?
Okay. The legislation particularly is about if you are a veteran and you have seen a psychiatrist or a psychologist while you were in the service or since you have left the service, when you go to renew your gun permit, it is not going to be renewed.
And, of course, this is really ridiculous. I mean, why would we single out veterans to take away their gun rights?
Well, the government is frightened to death of veterans. The government is frightened to death of guns. Guns and veterans together, the government is doubly frightened. And what they're doing is they're, in essence, they're doing away with the Second Amendment with this law.
And, of course, well, I think the point I would make out is do not join the military. Do not become a veteran. Because if you do, they're going to go after your right to have a weapon. And, of course, many, you might have been in the military and ordered to see a psychiatrist.
Yes.
You might be in the military and be ordered to see a psychologist. Either that or you're going to have to lie, and that becomes a federal crime. So you really don't have much choice.
Hey, I asked the question of this on this. And I got an honest answer from somebody in the Senate. I got an honest answer, believe it or not. I don't want to name the senator because he'll stand out like a sore thumb. I said, okay, I took a group in the veterans hospital, a non-smoking group, to get me to stop from smoking. I didn't see a psychiatrist. I saw a psychologist. Could this possibly lose me my permit to carry a weapon? And you know what he said? I didn't say it, but it could. The law could be interpreted any way they want to interpret this. It could actually lose you the right to have a weapons permit. Now, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, just outsmarted his congressional opposition into agreeing on a so-called compromise on H.R. 2640, that's the Veterans Disarmament Act. It's a bill which is now on the president's desk. And it's being praised now by the National Rifle Association and the Brady campaign And Representative Carolyn McCarthy, Democrat of New York, said, to me, this is the best Christmas present I could ever receive. She's one of the anti-gun groups around. And I have been advising veterans I know who say, I'm not worried about anything. Hold that thought.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is talking about this legislation that is on the president's desk that will take away from veterans, specifically veterans, the right to keep and bear a weapon if they've ever seen a psychiatrist or a psychologist, either when they were in the military or after they've left the military. Why are they targeting veterans? Why? Because they're trained in the use of weapons, and they want to disarm the people who are trained in the use of weapons. And they're using, well, you see, they must have an emotional problem. They've seen a psychologist or psychiatrist, and of course, as Arthur points out, he saw a psychologist to quit smoking, and yet that could be interpreted as having seen a psychologist and he loses right forever to have a gun permit.
Yeah,
and understand,
exactly,
ladies and gentlemen, that there really are people who want to disarm the people of America just as they wanted to disarm the people of Rwanda before the slaughter, before they disarmed the Jews before the slaughter, before they disarmed the Armenians before the slaughter,
exactly,
before they disarmed the
that.
Germans and the Chinese. And you look throughout the world wherever we've seen genocide, and they first disarm the people. And there really are people in America, and the National Rifle Association has been taken over and no longer represents the gun owners. But the average gun owner doesn't understand that. The only really good organization out there is Larry Pratt's Gun Owners of America. Larry's a personal friend, and, well, I'm concerned, of course, that they're the only one who's really fighting this.
Yes.
Gun Owners of America National Rifle Association went right along with the Brady Group.
I call them the Great Brady Group also. Yeah, exactly. The Brady Bunch. And, they crowed victory. Congress strengthens Brady background check system. And, the NRA, I think they stabbed everyone in the back with this.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, Moses is gone now. He's not here anymore. And the NRA turned around, and now they are agreeing with the government. It's being praised by the National Rifle Association.
And how many shootings have they actually had from veterans? One of the problems is, of course, that when you go to a psychiatrist, they put you on your Prozac drugs, which creates homicidal and suicidal and psychopathic ideology. And, of course, those of you who haven't heard my interviews with Dr. Ann Blake Tracy on the problem with the SSRI drugs, but the thing we ought to do is do away with the SSRI drugs, not of the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Go right ahead.
Okay, the core of the bill's problem. Now, the way they passed this was a sneaky way. They attached it to the school safety bill. It was attached to the school safety bill, so most of these people reading this didn't know what they were reading. And Congress seems to be doing this more and more. The core of the bill's problems is Section 101C1C, which makes you a prohibited person on the basis of a medical finding of disability, so long as a veteran has had an opportunity for some sort of a hearing before some lawful authority other than the court. Presumably, this lawful authority could be a psychiatrist or psychologist. Now, note that unlike with an accused murderer, the hearing doesn't have to occur. The lawful authority doesn't have to be unbiased. The veteran is not necessarily entitled to an attorney, much less an attorney financed by the government. So what do the proponents have to say about this? The argument is the Veterans Disarmament Act creates new avenues for prohibited persons to seek restorations of their gun rights. Now, the answer, what the bill does is to lock in statutorily huge numbers of additional law-abiding Americans who will now be denied the right to own a firearm, and then it graciously allows these newly disarmed Americans to spend tens of thousands of dollars for a long-shot chance to regain the gun rights this very bill takes away from them. And more to the point, what minimal gains were granted by the right hand are taken away by the left. Section 105 provides a process for some Americans diagnosed with so-called mental disabilities to get their rights restored in the state where they live. But then, in subsection A2, the bill stipulates that such relief may occur only if the person will not be likely to act in a manner dangerous to public safety, and that the granting of relief would not be contrary to the public interest. Now, doesn't this language sound similar to those state codes like California, your state, Dr. Stan, that have may issue concealed carry laws where citizens technically have the right to carry, but state law only says that the sheriffs may issue them a permit to carry? When given such leeway, those sheriffs usually do not grant the permits. Now, the prediction. Liberal states, the same states that took these people's rights away, will treat almost every person who has been illegitimately denied as a danger to society.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Arthur Bernclaw for Veterans for Constitutional Law, and he's talking about this new law that has been enacted that, of course, will tend to disarm veterans, any veteran who's seen a psychiatrist or psychologist while in the military or after he's left the military. And of course, this is really simply one more of the justifications that's used for disarming the American people. They don't want the American people to know what this is about, though. Oh, my goodness, the federal government is here to protect us from irresponsible veterans who are going to go mad and go into a church or go into a shopping center and start killing people with a firearm. But it is all part of the effort to find justification for disarming all of us. This is simply a stepping stone along of the way towards a much larger agenda. So pick up the story there, Arthur.
Okay. Well, let's make one thing clear here. The efforts began. This is nothing new. The efforts began during the Clinton presidency to disarm battle-scarred veterans, and it was promoted by the Brady anti-gun campaign. And it's illegal and morally reprehensible. But the Section 101 C1C of H.R. 2640 would rubber stamp these illegal actions. Over 140,000 law-abiding veterans would be statutorily barred from possessing firearms, and it's true they can hire a lawyer and beg the agency that took their rights away to voluntarily give them back, but the agency doesn't have to do anything but sit on its hands. And after 365 days of inaction, guess what happens? The newly disarmed veteran can spend thousands of additional dollars to sue, and as the plaintiff, the wrongly disarmed veteran has the burden of proof. Now, language proposed by the Gun Owners of America would have automatically restored a veteran's gun rights if the agency sat on its hands for a year. Unfortunately, the government, the GOA, Gun Owners of America amendment, was not included. The Veterans Disarmament Act passed both the House and Senate yesterday, and both times without a recorded vote. Now, get that. I'm going to repeat this. Both times without a recorded vote. That is, the bill passed by unanimous consent and then was then transmitted to the White House.
Well, now, wait a minute. You mean there were no opposition votes?
Nope. Unanimous consent. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And longtime Guns of America activists will remember that a similar compromise deal helped the original Brady Law get passed in 1993. There were only two or three senators on the floor of that chamber that used a unanimous consent agreement with no recorded vote to send the Brady Bill to President Clinton at a time when most legislators had already left town for the Thanksgiving break.
Well, you mean there was not a quorum there at the president?
Nope. They sneaked it through back then, and they're going to try to sneak it through right now on this. And
it sounds to me like they're already stuck it through. We'll be right back in just a moment here.
Well, it's on the president's desk now.
All right, fine. Do you have any idea how many members of the House of Representatives were present when they passed this legislation?
I know six opposed it, and 405 voted for it.
Oh, so they actually had a majority there.
Oh, yeah, for this
How could
they
do that with unanimous consent when there were six who opposed it?
Yeah. Now, how many? Ron Paul was one who opposed it.
Right.
But and five others. But how many people read this thing? It was it was attached to the school safety bill. It was actually attached to the school safety bill.
Well, of course, they're very, very clever in the way they do these things. Well, Arthur, before we go on, I want you to get your address and, of course, your telephone number out so people would know how to get in touch with Veterans for Constitutional Law and Arthur's group, who represents veterans who get into legal problems with the government, trying to get their disability benefits, trying to get their legitimate benefits that are guaranteed by law. And, of course, the Veterans Administration has a planned program of trying to limit access to benefits. So how can people get in touch with you so they can get advice and help when they get into the legal quagmire of the Veterans Administration?
This is what we really do. We help veterans with their claims, and we help veterans to get the benefits that the people in the VA are denying them. And we're very easy to reach. Our telephone number, somebody will always return a call to you. It's 631-474-4261. If you want to write us, we are at Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. I'm Arthur Bernklau. That's B-E-R-N-K-L-A-U. And it's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. And we're at 112 Jefferson Avenue, 112 Jefferson Avenue, in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. And all letters will be answered and all telephone calls will be called back.
All right, fine. One more time, your telephone number.
It's 631-474-4261. And, you know, when you call your Senate office and speak to somebody in the Senate, they're going to try to tell you there is no such thing as a Veterans Disarmament Act. It's attached to something else, but just come out with those numbers that I mentioned. Come out with those numbers, and that'll pinpoint it, because when you come out with the numbers, they'll know they can't pull anything on you. It's H.R. 2640 and S. 2084, and you know, there's a letter here that you may want to copy this down, and it's not just you know, you've got to call these senators and ask them to read the entire Veterans Disarmament Act for themselves. Most of these people did not read it, but urge them to read the entire bill, not just a few lines here and there.
Well, it's already passed the Senate, though, and it's already passed the House, hasn't it?
It's already passed the Senate. It's already passed the House. But it can't be called back.
All right, go ahead.
It can be called back. Now, they dare not vote for this bill without having read the text. And I'm not just guessing. I know they have not read the text and the underlying law and regulations for themselves.
But they don't read most of the bills.
That's right.
And that problem is that they don't have the time. This whole thing is set up to give the impression of representative government. But the Patriot Act, which is one of the most terrible pieces of legislation, they didn't even give it to them until just before it went under the House of Representatives. And, you know, hundreds of pages, there was no way they could possibly have read it all. And they simply stampeded them into it, saying, you can trust us. After all, we wouldn't betray you. And I will tell you, I've seen the same thing in organized medicine. You know, trust us. You know, you don't have to read the legislation. You don't have to read the bill, the resolution. Just trust us. And you never trust anybody.
Well, I've told the Gun Owners of America, I spoke to a gentleman down there, to send me anything that you want sent to our members. We have 83,000 members. Send me whatever you have, and I'll include it in our mailings going out. And I'll tell you, this is either an enormous bald-faced lie, or it's ignorance at its worst. But then again, whether it's deception or plain ignorance, either scenario is found quite commonly on Capitol Hill. And some of the Senate offices are telling people the Leahy-Schumer bill is only a bill about school safety and not a bill about disarming veterans.
All right, fine. What I can suggest is go to Gun Owners of America, their website, and they have an excellent, I'm sure they'll have an excellent summary of this legislation and the information you need to know.
Yeah, I've got their website here. If anyone can't find it, call me and I'll give them their website.
All right, Gun Owners of America. You Google it in, Gun Owners of America. Certainly an excellent organization. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, some officers have told the Gun Owners of America staff the bill doesn't say anything about veterans, and one particular office, that of Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah, is selectively quoting provisions of the bill to justify his support for the Veterans Disarmament Act. I call him Booby Hatch. I know this guy from years back. These arguments have been, they're repeated in different places and at different times, and there's even a military website where a broadcast journalist makes the same outlandish claim that there is no such thing as the Veterans Disarmament Act. But just like the journalist shouldn't attempt brain surgery, neither should they try to understand difficult pieces of legislation without an intimate knowledge of the federal code and regulations which are referenced in those bills. Now, after all, it does take more digging than just doing a word search for the word veteran to understand there are dangers hidden in the McCarthy-Schumer bill, which would ban hundreds of thousands of military veterans from owning guns. While it's not surprising that a journalist would fail to do this kind of homework, it's surprising that congressional offices would use such an amateurish argument to deflect criticism of a bill.
Well, I think you have to understand Larry Pratt at Gun Owners of America. And Larry's a personal friend, and they do a lot of research, and if they're opposing the bill, it's bad. And if they're supporting it, it's good. And I think you can pretty well stake the family jewels on Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America. And they will have the information. They know what this is doing, and I know they're opposing it. Okay,
well,
Arthur,
they
go
have
ahead.
A letter that they'd like you to send to the senators. And if you contact Gun Owners of America, it's a short letter. It says, "Dear Senator, I find it outrageous that there are offices on Capitol Hill with the audacity to claim that S-2084, a bill introduced by committed anti-gun activists like Patrick Leahy and Chuck Schumer, will neither affect veterans nor deny them their constitutional rights. And the truth is, S-2084 and its House counterpart, H.R. 2640, may claim to deal with school safety, but its real aim is to take away the people's gun rights, and those who have served in the military will be especially affected. The Veterans Disarmament Act, let's call it what it really is, will result in the disarmament of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of veterans, who risked life and limb in defense of our nation. Already, the Congressional Research Service has reported that up to 140,000 veterans have had their names placed in the NICS system, and these are men and women who have not been convicted of any crime whatsoever, and it's no wonder the American Legion and the Military Order of the Purple Heart have opposed this legislation. At least the service organizations are doing something about this now. This legislation changes statutory law so that a single shrink, a government psychiatrist, psychologist, or social worker, even a social worker, can deny any person, even a military veteran, their Second Amendment rights. And if you think this bill has nothing to do with veterans, or that this bill does not change federal law, then please do me a favor. Read the entire bill, not just a few lines here and there. And after you've read the bill, please look at the underlying law and regulations which are referenced in the bill. Gun Owners of America has devoted a special section on its website so that people can easily do this. This section also allows you to read the entire bill and get a scholarly point-by-point analysis of the Veterans Disarmament Act. And I am still waiting for you to join the hold on this legislation that was placed by Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma. What is taking you so long? Sincerely, that's the letter. If anyone has a difficult time finding it, please have them contact me.
All right, fine. That's certainly the Gun Owners of America's response to this legislation. You have to understand what's going on out there, and that's why we do programs with Larry Pratt and with Arthur Bernclough, so we can keep our listeners appraised of what is taking place. across America. So go ahead, Arthur.
Okay, now, I'm not much for quoting the Bible or religion because I'm not what you call a religious person, but this is out of Luke 22:36. He that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. Now, most of us are aware that the historic actions of a brave woman at the New Life Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, a few days back, beginning of the month, according to press reports, this brave woman at the church saved the lives of perhaps scores or even hundreds of people. However, her bravery would not have counted for much had she not been armed. On that fateful December Sunday, a man by the name of Matthew Murray entered the church armed to the teeth. According to press reports, he was armed with a semi-automatic rifle, two handguns, some smoke grenades, and more than 1,000 rounds of ammunition. By the time Murray arrived in the Colorado Springs church, he had already killed 4 people, 2 at a missionary training center a few miles away, and 2 in the church parking lot. He had wounded several others. Nobody realized it at the time, but the man was a serial killer in the midst of a rampage, and he doubtless planned to kill as many people as he could, and there were thousands of people inside the church. Had there not been an armed citizen in the church house, the death toll would have been massive. Now, according to church spokesman, the congregation has over a dozen members who volunteered to serve as security personnel for the church. Jean Assam was one of these volunteers. A former police officer, Assam said, "I saw him, Murray, coming through the doors, and I took cover. I waited for him to get closer. I came out of cover. I identified myself and engaged him and then took him down. Murray died in the exchange. Although Assam shot him several times with a 9mm pistol, the coroner's office said that Murray actually succumbed to a self-inflicted gunshot wound. After being incapacitated by Assam's gunfire, Murray apparently turned one of his weapons on himself. So we say we'll chalk one up for the good guys, or in this case, the good gals." Now, have you noticed...
It's interesting. How long ago did that happen?
It happened the end of the first week of December.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
December, I'd say 10th, 11th, around then. Now, have you noticed how the media dropped the Colorado story as soon as it was discovered that a lawfully armed citizen ended the potential massacre by using her own handgun?
I was just surprised that I hadn't heard about that more. You know, I think that I keep my ear pretty close to the ground, and I hadn't heard about that story.
They really killed the story. Now, had the killer been successful in murdering scores of people, however, it would have been at the top of the news for weeks. As it is, the story is already buried in the dungeon section of the news, if it is news at all now. And one thing the national news media will always ignore is the practice of lawful self-defense. For example, most people are probably not aware of the fact that American citizens use a firearm to defend themselves more than 2.4 million times every year. That is more than 6,500 times every day. This means that each year, firearms are used 60 times more often to protect the lives of honest citizens than to take lives. And furthermore, of the 2.4 million self-defense cases, more than 192,000 are by women defending themselves against sexual assault. And in less than 8% of those occasions is a shot actually fired. The vast majority of the time, 92%, the mere presence of a firearm helps to avert a major crime from occurring. And this is what Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, Republican of Maryland, concluded after extensive research. We still got a few good congressmen around. Not many, but a few. According to Representative Bartlett, the number of defensive uses is 4 times the number of crimes reported committed with guns. And John Lott, who is a senior research scientist at the University of Maryland, agrees with Bartlett. His book, More Guns, Less Crime, documents the facts that instead of being a cause of a crime, firearms in the hands of private citizens are actually a major deterrent to the crime.
Yes, I know. We've talked to John, to him, and interviewed him on that book.
Oh, great.
It's absolutely true. If they have an armed populace, you get less crime. In the areas where they have an armed populace, the crime rate drops. And the gun grabbers know that. They just don't want you to know that. Because they want you defenseless. In fact, probably one of the most dangerous places to be any place in America is on the schoolyard, because there are laws against anybody having a weapon to defend those children. And the only people then, of course, are going to come on there with a gun are those who want to shoot children. And why in heaven's name would you want to make our schoolyards a shooting center across this country? And there really are people who hate children, and that's why they pass this legislation, but they can't let the American people know that. They've got to try to pretend to be so concerned about the children. It's all about the children, and of course it's not about the children at all. The reason, of course, that we had the shooter there on Virginia Tech was, of course, first of all, the young man was on psychotropic drugs, probably one of the Prozac type of drugs, and secondly, of course, there was none of the children or the teachers could have a weapon to defend themselves. We'll be back here in just a moment or two with Arthur Burnclough as we wrap up today's program. Arthur, one more time, get your telephone number out there.
Okay, it's telephone number here is 631-474-4261. I'm Arthur Burnclough, and if anyone's having problems with the VA, and who isn't, we'll try to help you, and most cases we are helping people.
All right, fine. And this is Arthur Burnclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law. They do a great job. They're there to help you. They're independent of certainly the Veterans Administration, the Veterans Organizations.
Oh, they hate us.
Most of them have really sold out to the government.
Yeah.
And they're all on the take. So we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Arthur, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Okay. All right. Robert Heinlein said, an armed society is a polite society. Now, America's founding fathers agree with Heinlein. Thomas Jefferson said, no free man shall ever be disbarred the use of arms. He also said, laws that forbid the carrying of arms disarm only those who are neither inclined nor determined to commit crimes. Such laws make things worse for the assaulted and better for the assailants. They serve rather to encourage than to prevent homicides. For an unarmed man may be attacked with greater confidence than an armed man. Samuel Adams, another one of our founding fathers, said the Constitution shall never be construed to authorize Congress to infringe on the just liberty of the press or the rights of conscience, or to prevent people of the United States who are peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. And James Madison said, to preserve liberty, it is essential that the whole body of people always possess arms. Thomas Paine said, arms discourage and keep the invader and plunderer in awe and preserve order in the world as well as property. Horrid mischief would ensue where the law-abiding deprived the use of them. George Washington, the father of our country, called the private collections of arms the people's liberty teeth. America must always preserve the right to keep and bear arms. To do any less is to invite oppression and tyranny, not to mention acts of violence. And some years back, Alan Rice of the Jews for Preservation of Firearms Ownership, JPFO, wrote, since 1900, at least 7 major genocides have occurred, resulting in the murder of 50 to 60 million people. Ottoman Turkey, 1.5 million Armenians murdered. Soviet Union, 20 million anti-communists and anti-Stalinists murdered. Nazi Germany and occupied Europe, 13 million Jews, Gypsies, and anti-Nazis murdered. China, 20 million anti-communists murdered. Guatemala, 100,000 Mayan Indians murdered. Uganda, 300,000 Christians and political rivals of Idi Amin murdered. Cambodia, 1 million murdered. Rice continued to say, in all seven of the genocides summarized above, gun control laws were enforced before the genocide occurred, and in some cases even decades before. In five of the seven genocides, the lethal law, the gun control law,
hold that
was
thought
enforced.
Right there. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan in Sydney. Arthur Bernclough has been pointing out that before you have a genocide, you disarm the people, and whether it would be in Sydney, in Ottoman Turkey, the Armenians, or whether it would certainly be in Cambodia, whether it would be in the Congo, whether it would be in Uganda, whether it would be in Cambodia. Why, of course, they always disarm the people before they slaughter them. Thank you very much for being with us, Arthur. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to having you on again real soon.
Thank you for having me as your guest tonight, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
God bless you.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, fine. And ladies and gentlemen, we do hope that you understand that there really are people in the highest levels of our government who want to disarm our people. And their motivation is not to prevent gun violence. Their motivation is dictatorship and genocide. And there really are people out there who want genocide. If you haven't seen my DVD, None Dare Call It Genocide, let me suggest it. It's an excellent source of information. My talk on planned population reduction is an excellent source of information. That's planned population reduction. It's a DVD. My DVD on the hidden agenda. It's available on DVD or video. And also, of course, it's a syllabus with that. And there, of course, we quote from the book written by Bertrand Russell. We talks about, how suddenly you can't kill enough people through wars. What we need is a planned plague, a plague every generation, a black death sweeping across the world every generation. Keep the population down. That's page 103 and 104 of his book, and you'll actually see those pages reproduced in the syllabus, The Hidden Agenda. There really are people out there, like Jacques Cousteau, who advocated eliminating 350,000 people a day to bring the population back in balance. These people make Adolf Hitler look like a piker. And then if you haven't, of course, seen Alex Jones' excellent video or DVD, it's called The End Game, where he gets into population control. And that's Alex Jones, The End Game. It's an excellent source of information. So we ask you to give us call of 1-800-544-8927 if you're interested in any of the items we've talked about. 1-800-544-8927. Why do they want to disarm the American people? It's a step to tyranny. There really are people who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. And when you understand that, we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Everything makes a lot more sense. Otherwise, you try to name, it's the establishment, it's the Council on Foreign Relations, it's the Bilderbergers. Oh, incidentally, we do have a great new four-tape set on the Bilderbergers. Sydney, we carry the book on the Bilderbergers, and we think that this information is so vitally important. So if you'd like to get the book on the Bilderbergers or the four-tape set on the Bilderbergers, nobody has anything quite like that. Again, our number, if you'd like to, more information, 1-800-544-8927. The girls there can give you a suggested offering for the books. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to hear my talk on the forbidden secret. The forbidden secret. It goes along with my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. They're both available on CD, or, of course, the Brotherhood of Darkness is also available in book form. But it's vitally important that you have access to the information, that you understand there is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies and by the prophets and by the sages and by the elect in the secret societies. There have always been secret societies. There are secret societies today. But there is a secret, too, a secret to power. But you don't want to access the power. You want to know it's there and avoid it like the plague. So again, our telephone number for the Forbidden Secret and the secret behind the secret four-tape set and my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival.